Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 16th of April 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Bridget Dool and Stuart Jeffrey and recorded at home by Bridget Dool and Judith Piggott. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Following the news articles this week, we have the lyrics of a song called You Must Believe in Spring, selected and read by Jenny, who we welcome as a new Oxtalk volunteer. Sunrise today is at 6:05 a.m. and sunset is at 8:04 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on April the 16th in history. In 1705, Queen Anne of England knighted Isaac Newton during a royal visit to Trinity College, Cambridge. Newton was only the second scientist to be knighted, the first being Francis Bacon. In 1838, French forces occupied Vera Cruz in Mexico during the Pastry War. The conflict began after a French pastry cook living near Mexico City claimed that Mexican army officers had damaged his restaurant. In 1912, American aviator Harriet Quimby became the first woman to fly across the English Channel, guiding her French Blériot monoplane through heavy cloud from Dover, England to Hardelot in France. In 1948, in order to restore the economy of Europe after World War II, 16 European countries formed the Organisation for European Economic Cooperation. The organisation later became known as the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD. Births on this day: in 1786, Sir John Franklin, English Rear Admiral and renowned explorer of the Arctic. Born in Spilsby, Lincolnshire, as the ninth of 12 children. In 1867, Wilbur Wright, American pioneering aviator. Born in Millville, Indiana, and along with his younger brother Orville, he is generally credited with inventing, building, and flying the world's first successful airplane. They made the first controlled, sustained flight of an engine-powered, heavier-than-air aircraft near Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, on December the 17th, 1903. In 1921, Sir Peter Ustinov was born as Peter Alexander Freiherr von Ustinov in Belsize Park, London. The British actor, filmmaker and writer was internationally known as for being a raconteur and was a fixture on television talk shows and lecture circuits for much of his career. Ustinov received numerous accolades, including two Oscars, a BAFTA, three Emmys and a Grammy Award. And deaths on this day: in 1689, Aphra Behn, English dramatist, poet and novelist of the Restoration era, who died at the age of 48. Behn was one of the first English women to earn her living by her writing. She broke cultural barriers and served as a literary role model for later generations of women authors. Her grave is in Westminster Abbey, though not included in Poets' Corner. In 1850, Anna Maria Grosholtz, more famously known as Madame Tussaud, died. The French artist and sculptor, founder of Madame Tussaud's Wax Museum, died in her sleep in London at the age of 88. In 1991, David Lean, English film director widely considered as one of the most influential directors of all time, died of pneumonia at the age of 83. Lean was most famous for large-scale epic films such as Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence of Arabia, Bridge on the River Kwai and A Passage to India, winning several awards during his career. Now on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
Staff and residents at a care home in China have enjoyed a visit from a range of animals, including a bearded dragon and a tortoise. Hempton Field Care Home welcomed a contingent from Lucia's Tiny Farm, featuring guinea pigs and rabbits. Both staff and residents had the opportunity to cuddle the softer and friendlier creatures. The home welcomed Pepper the tortoise, Rosie and Joey the rabbits, and lots of guinea pigs, including Adele, Lola, and baby Lou. There was also the chance to meet Bernard, the bearded dragon, and some rats. One standout guest was Maggie, the chicken, who wandered freely around the home's courtyard and interiors. Jocelyn Wallang, general manager, said, "It has been a very special day for all ages. It's been wonderful to see so many of the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of our residents, as well as the community, coming together to enjoy the farm visit. I wouldn't have imagined we would have had so many different animals in the home." The visit falls under Hempton Field's Life Enrichment Programme, which aims to keep residents active with daily physical, mental and spiritual activities targeted at their interests. Hempton Field, managed by Barchester Healthcare, specialises in nursing, residential and respite care.
A study has been launched to discover if mild antidepressant can cut depression rates in patients with traumatic brain injury. The study, named STOP-D, is a collaboration between Oxford University Hospitals and King's College London. Patients will receive either the light antidepressant sertraline or a placebo for a full year. The study's aim is to track the potential impacts of sertraline on depression and life quality. It will recruit patients from 9 of England's top trauma centres, representing a wide range of socio-economic and ethnic backgrounds. Dr. Vanessa Raymond, co-chief investigator on the study from the University of Oxford Psychiatry Department, said, "Given that the risk of developing depression for those patients with a traumatic brain injury is so great, this study is a crucial step in supporting those patients to receive the best possible outcome for their long-term recovery and well-being. The risk of post-traumatic depression emerging so soon after a traumatic brain injury suggests that initiation of an antidepressant within a few weeks of the traumatic brain injury could significantly reduce the incidence of post-traumatic depression. Our findings will inform whether and how to integrate the screening and management for depression in traumatic brain injury patients within major trauma centres nationally."
Ofsted has rated Oxfordshire County Council's children's services as good, following an inspection in February. This marked the second such positive assessment, with the same services also deemed to be good during the last inspection held in 2018. Inspectors noted multiple improvements across the council's services since 2018. Ofsted judged the council's children's services as good across all five areas of inspection criteria. These are overall effectiveness, impact of leaders on social work practice with children and families, experiences and progress of children who need help and protection, experiences and progress of children in care, and experience and progress of care leavers. Ofsted said, "The Chief Executive Officer is ambitious for children and has a good understanding of the priorities for improving the lives of the most vulnerable children. Strong political and corporate support has continued and has ensured that the Children's Directorate has received ongoing investment to develop and strengthen services for vulnerable children. The newly appointed Permanent Director of Children's Services, together with political and corporate leaders, are committed to and ambitious for children and young people." Councillor John Howson, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Education and Young People's Services, said, "This result is a testament to the incredible hard work and dedication of our children's services teams, supporting and protecting some of the most vulnerable young people and families in the county." Inspectors said, "Children are young people who need help and protection receive proportionate and timely support. Families benefit from a range of specialist services, including clinical support to reduce risks to children because of parental domestic abuse and substance misuse." The Ofsted team also noted that The social workers demonstrated a good understanding of their children and circumstances. The inspectors continue. Many children have stable relationships with their social workers who undertake creative life story and direct work. A range of age-appropriate tools are used so that children are able to understand their plans. Many care leavers appreciate the impactful help that they receive, including a range of practical assistance. Care leavers who arrive in the UK as unaccompanied asylum-seeking children are well supported by social workers who get to know them well. They live in suitable homes and are helped to learn English and develop their independence skills. Mr. Howson added, independent external scrutiny is important in endorsing the progress we've made since the previous inspection in 2018. It also gives us guidance on where further improvements are needed. We will work tirelessly to continue to provide an outstanding service for every child and young person. The inspections were carried out under the government's Inspecting Local Authorities Children's Services initiative.
A volunteer service aimed at tackling homelessness and rough sleeping is set to be launched in Oxford. National homeless charity St Mungo's First Response Initiative, which has already been launched in London Borough of Westminster, Bristol and Reading, has seen more than 300 volunteers recruited since its inception in 2018. Volunteers are trained to work with StreetLink, the National Rough Sleeping Referral Service, and St Mungo's outreach teams to find people who are sleeping rough. Their role involves locating individuals reported to be sleeping outside, allowing St Mungo's outreach teams to use their time effectively. Typically, more than 80% of public referrals turn out to be fruitless, resulting in specialists often checking empty sites. The first response volunteers have proven instrumental in filtering these referrals, allowing the specialists to dedicate their time more meaningfully. Jordan Pryor, St Mungo's first response coordinator, said, "We look forward to launching First Response in Oxford in the coming weeks. We have seen what a huge difference the service makes in other areas it's provided." He also highlighted the ongoing recruitment efforts for the initiative. He said, "We are now seeking first response volunteers who will look for vulnerable people sleeping rough across the city to make sure they are supported. We would urge anyone interested to apply for the volunteering role to help their local community. Their incredible contribution means that our outreach teams can dedicate more time to offering people routes out of homelessness and towards recovery, including helping them to access support services and accommodation." First response volunteer Martin said, "I've always been amazed and inspired by the dedication and the hours that St Mungo's outreach team put in. With the long, challenging night shifts alongside all the administration afterwards. I take my hat off to them, as we volunteers are just trying to support them. Some of the life stories you hear when you meet people who are rough sleeping are deeply moving, where people have lost connection with family or home. It reminds you that it only takes three turns of bad luck and anyone might end up on the streets. Volunteering is inspiring and spirits are truly lifted when something unexpectedly positive happens after months, if not years, of patient dedication by Mungo's team who have never given up on an individual. Interested parties can learn more about the opportunities available on the St Mungo's website. In 2022-23, St Mungo's supported 28,359 people who were homeless or at the risk of homelessness, and on average the charity provided 2,735 people with housing and support on any given night.
Cops got in a flap and thought their patrol cars were faulty, only to discover a crow was mimicking a police siren. Traffic officers from Thames Valley Police were baffled after they kept hearing their car warning horns going off at random. They discovered the real culprit was a cheeky crow, nesting in trees above a police station in Bicester, imitating the siren sound. The force filmed the crow and posted the astonishing footage on their Facebook page. They said, "Before you read on, this is 100% real and is not a late April Fool's joke." Officers at our Rhodes policing base in Bicester have been left a little bit confused this week after finding out one of their resident crows has learnt to mimic the sound of a police siren. It's so accurate, they've been left thinking the sirens were faulty on the cars. From our workshops that test the two-tone tune to officers deploying to jobs, this little fella has been sat patiently observing the noise to then recreate. Social media users were quick to express their views on the cheeky crow. One Facebook user said, "Nick him, he deserves to do bird." Another joked, "Obviously part of the flying squad." And one quipped, "Bicester's newest recruit to special branch."
Oxford is clearly the place to be after being named one of the most popular cities to visit in the UK this year, it's been claimed. Among England's most beautiful cities, with its ancient university, beautiful buildings and iconic skyline of dreaming spires, Oxford was ranked 5th in the list. The city ranked behind York, London, Edinburgh and its varsity rival Cambridge. Oxford was 5th, beating Brighton, Liverpool, Manchester, Portsmouth and Bristol, which made up the rest of the top 10. The survey results could provide cheer to businesses in the city and the wider county. YouGov ratings measure the popularity and fame of anything and everything, based on millions of responses by the British public. According to YouGov, based on the millions of responses and growing daily, YouGov ratings provides a way to determine the nationally representative popularity score for thousands of things, from brands and products to companies and people.
The river search has continued into its third day after multiple reports that a man in his 60s fell into the river on East Street in Osney Mead on Tuesday afternoon, the 9th of April. Emergency services, including police, fire and rescue and paramedics, all raced to Osney near Botley Road at around 1:20 p.m. Shortly after the search, Thames Valley Police received reports of a missing person who matched the description of the man seen to enter the water. On Thursday, the 11th of April, the force said it was confident that the man who went into the water is the same individual who was reported missing. Detective Chief Inspector Nicola Underhill said, "We are continuing our activity to locate a man who was seen to enter the water from East Street in Osney Mead on Tuesday at around 1:20 p.m. We are utilising specialist search police resources with assistance from the Joint Operations Marine Unit and Oxfordshire Search and Rescue. Our search activity is guided by the Environment Agency advice around current water conditions. Following further investigation work, we are as confident as we can be that the man who went into the water is the man who was reported missing to us. Our thoughts remain with the man's family, and we continue to support them and are providing updates on our search. Sadly, there is still no evidence to suggest that the man came out of the water. We will continue our search activity in order to locate him." Thames Valley Police also revealed that members of the public had initially tried to help the man after he had entered the water. "I would like to thank all of the members of the public who called us and tried to assist the man in the water," a spokesman said. "If anyone has information, we would ask them to call 101, quoting the reference 432-401-616-77.
New plans for a 5-storey city centre science lab have prompted fears the development could ruin the city's skyline. The proposals are being put forward by applicant Forge BioGP2 for land at Beaver House and buildings at 39 to 42A Hythe Bridge Street in Oxford. Under the plans, the existing 1970s Beaver House building, used as office space, would be demolished alongside the two restaurants next door. The new life science facility, close to Oxford Railway Station, would be known as Bridge Labs. Some neighbours have already weighed in with their concerns around the application, which was listed on the City Council's website last month. Objector and Oxford householder Steve Clark said, "Five stories is much higher than the period buildings opposite, or even the modern buildings next to them. The increasing height of modern buildings is ruining the architectural skyline of the city." The planning paper insists Bridge Labs will aim to strengthen Oxford's position at the centre of life science development and respond to the demand for life science lab space in the city. It adds, "The project aims to transform Beaver House into Bridge Labs, a state-of-the-art life science facility which offers flexible lab and office space. Alongside new business space, Bridge Labs will develop high-quality public space improvements, which include a new cafe, enlarged and enhanced public realm, and a community garden. The development will create a new local hub where people can collaborate and innovate in a modern environment, which complements the city's history and future." Another objector, an Oxford resident, Katie Dawley, added, "The existing buildings are not an eyesore. What's proposed is not in keeping with the area. I really object to tearing down our city even more and replacing it with designs that do not fit or match the face of what's left of our city." The applicant says the existing Beaver House building clashes with its historic setting and provides an uninviting arrival experience into Oxford. The applicant concluded, "Our vision is that Bridge Labs will play a key role in helping Oxford remain at the cutting edge of life science development in the Golden Triangle area between Oxford, Cambridge and London. Bridge Labs will create up to 800 jobs, increasing the local workforce and keeping skilled professionals in Oxford."
The White Horse Half Marathon made a return for its 39th edition after it was called off last year due to flooding. The event, which took place on April the 7th and was organised by White Horse Harriers, saw 424 runners gracing the route. The route stretched from Grove through Dentworth, Lidford and Charney Bassett before circling back to Grove. The first finisher was Matthew Locke of Whitney Roadrunners, who completed the run in a time of 1 hour, 11 minutes and 36 seconds. Gareth Smith, the former chairman and now organising committee member of the White Horse Harriers, said, "A good brisk wind meant the runners had a headwind for much of the second half of the course, making for a more challenging event." Anna Scrivens, the first woman to cross the finish line, completed her race in a time of 1 hour, 27 minutes, 14 seconds. Miss Scrivens, also from Whitney Roadrunners, showcased her tenacity against the powerful headwind. White Horse Harriers said they would like to thank all the volunteers and organisations who made the event possible, including St John's Academy, Grove Rugby Club and Shackleton Explorer Scouts. They added they would also like to acknowledge the patience of those affected by any traffic disruption as the runners passed through.
The gap between male and female driving test pass rates remained unchanged at Oxford Test Centre, new figures show. Figures from the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency show male drivers took 4,106 tests at Oxford Test Centre in 2023, 1,921 of which were successful, a pass rate of 46.8%. Meanwhile, 40.5% of the 4,071 tests taken by women were passed over this period, giving a gap of 6.3 percentage points. In 2019, 45.8% of women gained their licence at the centre, compared to 52% of men, a difference of 6.2%. It meant the gap has remained fairly even since then. The overall pass rate at Oxford Test Centre for 2023 was 43.7%, down from the 48.7% 4 years before. This was lower than the average rate across Great Britain of 48.2%. Camilla Benitez, Managing Director of the AA Driving School, said, "Learners can only book their practical test once they have secured that all-important theory test pass. Given the long waits many learners are still facing to book their practical driving test, it is good to see the overall practical test pass rate has risen slightly, meaning fewer will face a lengthy wait to rebook another test." However, she added, the pass rate for the theory test is stubbornly low and has fallen by a third since 2007-08. Across the country, women proved better than men at theory tests. They had the pass rate of 46.8%, while 43.5% of tests taken by men were successful. In Oxford, this stood at 54.8% and 48.8% respectively. Ms. Benitez said, "While young male drivers are statistically more likely to be involved in a crash than young female drivers, this is not considered when it comes to insurance prices. It is currently illegal for insurers to take gender into account when calculating premiums. However, the Confused.com Car Insurance Price Index for the latest quarter of 2023 shows on average men were paying £177 more than women." Louise Thomas, motor expert at the comparison site, said, "While gender is not considered, prices are based on other factors, such as the type of vehicle, any modifications made to it, as well as claims and conviction history." A DVSA spokesperson said, "DVSA's priority is to continue to reduce waiting times, and thanks to the measures we introduced since October 2023, we have reduced waiting times by more than 4 weeks and are on the way to reaching our target to provide an additional 150,000 tests."
Allegations of discrimination have emerged following a spat between politicians over controversial traffic scheme exemptions. Mems Baron from Oxford took to social media to express disapproval at an Oxfordshire County Council proposal to end blue badge holder vehicle discounts for disabled people to the Oxford Zero Emission Zone (ZEZ) scheme on the 31st of July 2025. The council says it will review the policy in December to decide if the exemption period should be extended. The ZEZ would charge drivers of all non-zero emission vehicles using certain roads with the aim of improving air quality unless they are exempt. Objector Mem said, "It should go without saying that blue badge holders should have an exemption through the ZEZ's expansion. That the Lib Dems are suggesting a rethink on this shows their lack of understanding and, frankly, their disrespect for disabled people." The comments come in response to a public post by Liberal Democrat Neil Fawcett, Cabinet Member for Community and Corporate Services, who said, "If you are disabled and poor, you are unlikely to have a car." Council candidates for the independent Oxford Alliance Party also took to social media to share their thoughts on the comments. Oxfordshire County Council has confirmed the ZEZ pilot was introduced in February 2022, having been approved by the previous administration in March 2021. A spokesman added, "The approved scheme included a discount end date of July 2025 for the blue badge holder discount, but also included a commitment to review the end date by the end of 2024. In September and October 2023, the council consulted on changes to the ZEZ pilot, including a proposal to remove the end date for the blue badge holder discount, which would mean that blue badge holders would benefit from a 100% ZEZ discount indefinitely. A decision has yet to be made, but is expected before the end of 2024. Mr. Fawcett clarified his controversial comment had been made in reference to the suggestion poor and disabled people were being specifically targeted by the council. He said, "The point I was making is that there's only a majority of poor and disabled people actually own cars. The argument that they were putting is that ZEZ is a target tax targeted at poor and disabled people. If anybody, it's targeted at the people most likely to own cars." St. Mary's Ward Green councillor Emily Kerr said, "My thoughts at this early stage are that it might make sense to consider further exemptions for wheelchair accessible vehicles, given that there still appears to be a shortage of electric and hybrid WAVs, that's wheelchair accessible vehicles, in the UK market. Although I would expect that to be part of the December review, which will look at all elements."
The sight of thousands of purple and white checkered snake's head fritillaries at these ancient wet meadows will take your breath away. Each spring, Iffley Meadows plays host to a wonderful wildlife spectacle where you can enjoy Oxfordshire's iconic flower, the snake's head fritillary, in bloom in its natural surroundings. Before BBOWT took over management of the Nature Reserve in 1983, a mere 500 of these flowers could be found. As a result of the Trust's careful management of the site and controlled grazing, numbers of fritillaries have shot up to over 89,000 in a good year. A huge success story. Take your wellies, it might be a bit muddy underfoot.
A wonderful dog, who has fathered more than 300 puppies as part of the Guide Dogs breeding programme, has retired from the charity. Golden Retriever Trigger, 9, has fathered 39 litters, including one with 16 puppies in 2021, which was a record-breaking number for the charity. 294 of his puppies have been bred by Guide Dogs, and 29 others have been born from his valuable collaborations with Guide Dog schools and other assistance dog charities. His final Golden Retriever litter was 5 girls, Jenny, Rita, Hermione, Sandy and Indy, and 1 boy, Billy, who are all 8 weeks old. Janine Dixon, head of breeding operations at Guide Dog, said, "We can't overstate the impact that Trigger has had in helping us to provide so many guide dogs for people with sight loss." Trigger will stay in Banbury with his breeding dog volunteer, Sarah Byrne, who will officially adopt him after looking after him for the past 7 years.
Around 5,000 people are set to take part in a trial aimed at identifying quick and accurate blood tests to diagnose Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia. The initiative is being carried out by Dementius Platform UK researchers based at both the University of Oxford and University College London. Statistics show that a third of dementia patients never receive a formal diagnosis. The hope is that the trial will lead to an increase in people gaining access to care, support, and new drug treatments at an earlier stage of the disease. The two teams will recruit participants from across the country to ensure their findings are applicable to the whole of the UK's population. The study has attracted funding from the Alzheimer's Society, Alzheimer's Research UK, and the National Institute for Health and Care Research, along with Gates Ventures. This includes a £5 million donation from the People's Postcode Lottery. Dr. Vanessa Raymond, the chief investigator in Oxford for the study, said, "Since I first stepped into a memory clinic 30 years ago, there has thankfully been a shift in the way society thinks about dementia. There was previously a feeling that this was just another part of ageing, but now we're seeing that people want to know more about their condition, and they want a diagnosis as it helps them access the support they need." Dr. Raymond will test several existing and potential blood tests for various types of dementia, including Alzheimer's, vascular dementia, frontotemporal dementia, and dementia with Lewy bodies. There's also a plan to analyse if the blood test can detect these diseases at different stages. She added, "Both my parents live with dementia, so I know firsthand the devastation that this disease causes and how a timely and accurate diagnosis can benefit people and their families. An accurate and timely diagnosis is crucial in diseases that cause dementia, including Alzheimer's. Early identification means the necessary care and support can be provided and patients can be included in ongoing medical research. This will be even more important if new treatments are approved for use in the NHS, as these work best for people in the earliest stages of their disease. The majority of diagnosed individuals are currently evaluated via memory tests and brain scans, procedures less accurate than gold standard tests like PET scans and lumbar punctures. However, only 2% of patients have access to these specialist tests. Blood tests diagnosing Alzheimer's and other causes of dementia show promising results in research settings, but they have not yet been trialled extensively in clinical settings."
Jeremy Clarkson is understood to be in talks over possible plans to buy a pub near his brewery in the Cotswolds. The TV presenter was rumoured to be interested in buying the Coach and Horses Inn in Boughton-on-the-Water last summer. The property is closed but has operated as both a pub and an Indian restaurant in recent years. It is listed as a retail partnership tenancy by pub company Stonegate Group, which says it's looking for an innovative and skillful publican. According to the group's website, it has a potential turnover of £367,000 a year and is available for the introductory rent of £481 per week. Situated beside the A429 Stowe Road in Boughton, it is opposite Hawkstone Brewery, where Mr. Clarkson's lager and cider is brewed. In March, the Clarkson's farm star visited Cotswold District Council to discuss possible highways issues. The talks are believed to be ahead of submitting a formal planning application. The Grand Tour presenter previously had plans to build a restaurant at his Diddley Squat Farm 15 miles away near Chipping Norton, but this was rejected by both West Oxfordshire District Council and at appeal by a planning inspector.
A hospice in Headington is raising desperately needed funds to refurbish one of its rooms. Sobel House Hospice has launched the Family Room Appeal to raise money needed to renovate the area meant for the friends and families of patients. The hospital has so far raised £15,000, but said it needs to raise more to be able to make the changes. These changes include adapting the kitchen area to be truly functional, providing a child-friendly space for the hospice's youngest visitors, purchasing a new television and streaming subscriptions to enable families to enjoy movie nights, and improving the lighting to help create a relaxing mood. The hospice said, "Please help us to renovate our family room and create a homely, comfortable space for patients to spend quality time with their loved ones." Donations can be made to the appeal via the Sobel House Hospice website. The hospice, which was founded in 1976 and is based on the Churchill Hospital site, is part of the Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. It provides specialist palliative care to around 3,000 people facing life-threatening illness, death and bereavement in Oxfordshire every year. This includes physical, psychological, social and spiritual care for around 500 patients at any given time.
Music and fireworks are being offered in a traditional event at Blenheim Palace this summer. The annual Battle Proms picnic concert is scheduled for Saturday, July the 6th. This year's event will feature the New English Concert Orchestra for their 19th performance at the Woodstock Palace, along with aerial and pyrotechnic displays. The audience will be serenaded with harmonies from the Battle Proms bells and their live band in the afternoon, while the day will end with traditional Last Night of the Proms favourites beneath a sky filled with fireworks. This year, the orchestral programme includes modern pieces such as the Dam Busters March, the Downton Abbey theme, and Gershwin's Summertime, performed by soprano Denise Lee. There will also be classical favourites such as Elgar's Nimrod and Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. Concertgoers will also have the chance to enjoy a horseback cavalry through the ages show, as well as displays from the British Army's Red Devils parachutists and the Grace Spitfire. This year marks 80 years since the Grace Spitfire shot down the first enemy aircraft on D-Day. The event will end with 200 cannons and firework displays alongside the music. Visitors are allowed to bring their own picnics and drinks into the auditorium. Tickets can be bought from the Battle Proms website, with bookings before the end of April coming with a discount.
Hundreds of objections have been raised over plans to build houses and a care home across two green fields. The decision is due on the proposal for 121 homes, an 80-bed care home and green space for land at Bayswater Farm on the outskirts of Headington. The scheme was submitted to South Oxfordshire District Council in January and has a target decision date of the 11th of April. Land at the Sandfield site near Barton is part of a strategic allocation in South Oxfordshire's Local Plan 2035, with a total 110-hectare area expected to deliver around 1,100 homes up to 2034. Objecting to the Bayswater Farm development, householder Michael March said, "I can see no justification for concreting over Bayswater Farm field now, when it has resisted repeated developers' attempts to do so over the past 65 years or so. And the reasons that have been given for refusing permission for development are as valid today as they ever were, if not more so." Barton and Sandhills ward councillor Jabu Nala Hartley has also said she's against the plan to build at Bayswater Farm, with environmental grounds forming the basis of her objection. The Oxford Socialist Independent Councillor said, "I am against the development because most people that are going to have those homes are millionaires. They are being created to create second homes, not social housing." A South Oxfordshire planning statement says, "Crucially, there are currently 3,370 and 3,401 people waiting for a home on the Oxfordshire and Oxford City Council housing registers, respectively. This application will, as part of the affordable housing package, deliver a minimum of 35% social rented tenure homes. This would equate to up to 25 social rented properties for those in the greatest housing need. Furthermore, 25% of affordable homes would be provided as affordable rented tenure, equating to 18 homes. This is a significant social benefit of the development." Mike Rowley, also a ward councillor for Barton and Sandhills, has said he will continue to oppose the development due to transport concerns. Oxford resident and objector Rosalind Rogers said, "This application will change the character of this outer city estate with its tree-lined roads. Having heavy construction traffic through could lead to damaged grass verges and the loss of trees." The applicant insists the development will create access to existing greenbelt land through delivery of new footpaths across the site, linking to the existing network. A planning paper concludes, "This enables the retained green belt to the northern edge of the site to provide a recreational resource with biodiversity enhancements to be delivered through the development. The substantial area of open space will include an extensive network of routes which connect into the wider pedestrian and cycle network."
A historic copy of a local newspaper, which was printed when King Charles II was living in Oxford, has gone on sale for £1,500. The Oxford Gazette was established in November 1665 to provide an official record of news while the court of King Charles II was in Oxford during the Great Plague of London. Cheap shop Sanders of Oxford has listed a copy of this historic publication, which dates back over 350 years. This particular edition of the newspaper was printed by Leonard Litchfield and covers events from Monday, January the 15th to Thursday, January the 18th, 1666. Reports cover shipwrecks around Penzance, conflicts between the French crown and the clergy, as well as Dutch naval and military movements. Also mentioned was an impromptu duel between the Chevalier de Clermont and Monsieur de la Fervillade, and attempts at peace talks between Spain and Portugal. The positions of the French fleet in the Channel and the Mediterranean, and the sighting of Dutch men of war off the coast near Whitby, also featured. Finally, the arrival of various cargo ships to English ports carrying timber, herring, wine, and brandy, and a letter from Paris containing news of the death of Anne of Austria was included. Anne of Austria was the queen mother of the King of France. Perhaps the most interesting, though gruesome, detail is the weekly Bill of Mortality, providing details of deaths from the plague and the increasing cases from the previous week. As many as 158 deaths were attributed to plague in the 4 days of the issue, though the number was likely to have been much higher. Before the Great Plague, there had been no formal system for the recording of deaths, with parishes instead appointing searchers of the dead to carry out a tally and record causes of death. These searchers were rarely medically trained and commonly misreported the cause of death. Contemporary accounts also attribute some inconsistencies to the deliberate misreporting, most likely through bribery to avoid the consequences to family members of plague victims. Under quarantine rules, the close contacts of plague sufferers were confined to their homes under armed guard for 40 days, which was often a death sentence to the entire household, either through plague or neglect. Leonard Litchfield II was an Oxford-based printer and publisher, and the third in line of publishers who served as the printer for the University of Oxford. And this item is one of 50 prints included in Sanders' catalogue of recent acquisitions and is offered for sale at £1,500.
It's just over 1 year since the final episode of the Oxford set series Endeavour was televised. The TV crime drama lasted for 9 seasons on ITV following the success of its first episode on the 2nd of January 2012. Acting as a prequel to the massively popular sister shows Morse and Lewis, Endeavour starred Sean Evans as Inspector Morse and covered his rise in the detective world. The show finished on the 12th of March 2023, with its final story being watched by millions of viewers across the country. With the first anniversary of Endeavour's conclusion upon us, we decided to take a look at what 3 major cast members have been up to. Following on from that, we are now taking a look at what the other stars of the show have been working on since the final episode. Starring as Endeavour's top boss, Chief Superintendent Bright, Anton Lesser's police boss became a familiar yet stern face on our screens. Anton recently returned to Oxford, where large parts of Endeavour were filmed, to star in the one-night-only adaptation of Red Sky at Sunrise. Staged at Oxford Playhouse, the show took place on a simple stage, with Lesser playing author Laurie Lee, covering his life from his childhood during the First World War to fighting for the Spanish Republican Army. Aside from his professional work, the Game of Thrones actor became a patron of Shipston Home Nursing last year. The organisation offers an end-of-life service in the house of patients who would prefer to be in their home surroundings and the actor starred in their Christmas appeal video in 2023. Another colleague of Inspector Morse, DS Jim Strange, was a staple throughout the ITV crime drama, with the character also starring in the original Morse series. The beloved character was portrayed by Preston-born Sean Rigby throughout Endeavour's 11-year run on the small screen. After bidding farewell to Jim, the 34-year-old actor went on to star in two episodes of Apple TV's Foundation as Nolan Seldon in the sci-fi show's second season. A complex saga of humans scattered on planets throughout the galaxy, all living under the rule of the Galactic Empire. The show was originally released in 2021. The resident Sawbones on the show, Dr. Max Debrin, was another long-standing character throughout Endeavour's lifespan on the television. Portrayed by James Bradshaw, the police doctor often could be spotted at the crime scene, helping Sean Evans's Morse determine the cause of death. Also taking to the stage, like Anton Lesser, James starred as Edward in a Mark Gatiss-directed play, The Way Old Friends Do. The show ran throughout 2023 at London's Park Theatre and also came to Oxford Playhouse in May of last year.
The Acorn Community Bank is celebrating its first birthday by passing a £2 million lending milestone and welcoming more than 1,000 new members. The bank was formed last April after a merger between Wiltshire and Swindon Credit Union, Clivey Credit Union in Swindon, and Swan Community Bank in Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire to create one entity. Since then, it has seen its membership rise from 4,184 to 5,308, with 30 new people joining each month. Since last April, Acorn has loaned £2.2 million to its members. Credit unions, which are owned by their members and run on their behalf, provide affordable loans for people who are unable to get credit elsewhere, to prevent them from going to payday loan sharks. Members open savings accounts and, provided they meet loan criteria, can take out loans which are repaid monthly. Manager Clive Henley said, "It's been a fantastic first year for Acorn, and none of us can believe it has passed so quickly. In the months leading up to Christmas, we saw an increasing demand for loans, though this has recently eased up a little." In response to a rise in the number of members asking for loans to buy school uniform at the start of the autumn term, Acorn launched a uniform saver account so that families can put away money throughout the year. Its Christmas Saver scheme helped 200 members put away money to help them cover the costs of presents. Mr. Henley said, "Our savings incentives have proved to be very popular, with 470 people taking part, saving £42,600 so far." The bank, which is also set to launch a project in Wiltshire and Salisbury to help people facing life-changing situations such as long-term illnesses or loss of employment, get financial support and plan financially for their future. The bank has been nominated for the Best Credit Union South Award in Financial Websites Smart Money People's Annual Consumer Credit Awards. Its forerunner won the award 2 years ago. Staff at Acorn have been working alongside loan shark experts from England's illegal money lending team to highlight the dangers of borrowing from loan sharks and encouraging members to save regularly. Mr. Henley is expecting Acorn to see demand for loans continue, despite the recent fall in inflation. "The rise in membership and demand has been consistent in all areas," he said. "The cost of living issue continues to put pressure on people's budgets, and we're seeing this when we assess their affordability when they apply for a loan. Now that inflation is easing, we are preparing to support our members as they take new steps in their financial journey, perhaps looking to fund home improvements, cars, and holidays." For more details about the bank services or to get in touch, go to acorncommunitybank.co.uk. Vote for the bank in the Smart Money People's Awards at smartmoneypeople.com.
The University of Oxford has been awarded £9 million to support the next generation of doctors and scientists to develop cancer treatments. The money provided by Cancer Research UK will be directed towards the training of early career clinician scientists as part of Cancer Research UK's Clinical Academic Training Programme. Clinician scientists help to bridge the gap between laboratory and patient-centred clinical research. Professor Mark Middleton, the academic lead for the Clinical Academic Training Programme in Oxford, said, "We are delighted to gain further Cancer Research UK funding to help train tomorrow's leading cancer researchers. Cancer Research UK's funding means not only that our doctors and medical students can train as scientists, but also that our scientists will understand better how to apply their work to the benefit of patients. Training as a clinical scientist typically involves doctors embarking on a PhD, causing an interruption in their medical training before they can return to specialise. However, pressures on the healthcare system and lack of funding often deter clinicians from returning to research. Cancer Research UK aims to address this issue with flexibility and accommodating training options."
The next steps towards the county's first Hindu temple and community centre have been taken with the submission of a further planning application. Leaders of the county's 5,000-strong Hindu community have been hiring rooms in schools and community centres for worship and have been campaigning for a purpose-built temple in the city for 16 years. The Oxford Hindu Temple and Community Centre Project, OHTCCP, agreed to a 26-year lease with Oxford City Council on the pavilion at Court Farm Place in Marsh Lane in Marston in March. It followed more than 3 years of negotiations with the City Council and a successful bid made when the building went on the open market. Plans to turn the football changing rooms at the derelict sports pavilion into two halls, one as a place of worship and the second as a place for community gatherings, were approved by Oxford City Council last July. A new planning application seeks permission to external changes to the 1970s pavilion, including masonry repairs, replacement of timber cladding with cement wall cladding, new windows and doors, as well as a replacement roof. It also seeks permission to provide car parking, two electric vehicle charging points, bin and cycle storage, and alterations to landscaping arrangements. A planning document states, "OHTCCP was established to cater for the needs of over 5,000 Hindus in Oxfordshire. Currently, they have no premises of their own in the entire county, and they hire a community centre to run monthly communal religious services. This arrangement is suboptimal." It says that in parking terms, the pavilion's previous use and the proposed use are not too dissimilar, and parking concerns were raised but addressed in the approved application. A travel plan which promotes walking, cycling and public transport, car sharing schemes, use of local public transport, plus the capacity of the local public car park, render any counter-argument to parking and travel issues void. The building will also be used as a social hub for elderly and vulnerable people, for English language lessons, yoga and well-being classes, music and culture sessions, and will host food kitchens. Members of the OHTCCP, which is a charity, received the keys to the site from Oxford City Council leader Susan Brown earlier this month during celebrations for Holi. Dr. Gyan Gopal, founding chairman of OHTCCP, said, "Work has now started to clear out the inside and build the necessary halls, utilities and rooms."
An Oxford man is preparing to cycle the entire Tour de France route to raise funds for a national blood cancer charity. Ian McMahon will be part of a team of 25 amateur cyclists, hoping to generate more than £1 million for Cure Leukemia. The journey, covering all 21 stages of the 3,492-kilometre 2024 route, will see the team cycling the route just a week before the professionals. The event, entitled the Tour 21, will run from Friday the 22nd of June to Sunday the 14th of July. It starts in the city of Florence in northern Italy, following the exact route of the Tour de France. Mr. McMahon said, "Participating in the Tour 21 is more than just a personal challenge. It's a commitment to make a real difference. Every pedalled stroke through the 3,492 kilometres is a testament to our collective effort to fight blood cancer. I'm riding not only for myself, but for those who are battling this disease every day. Funds raised will support the National Trials Acceleration Programme Network, financed by Cure Leukemia. The network is made up of specialist research nurses at 15 blood cancer centres in the UK's largest cities. Its primary aim is the accelerated setup and delivery of potentially life-saving blood cancer clinical trials, providing patients with access to treatment not currently available through standard care. In preparation for the trial, Mr. McMahon and the team have been training in Mallorca, tackling mountainous terrain similar to the conditions they will face during the tour. The team will take on 52,300 metres of elevation across the 21 stages, the equivalent of cycling up Mount Everest 6 times. Mr. McMahon said, "This ride isn't just about enduring one of the world's most grueling cycling challenges. It's about embodying the spirit of resilience and hope that we want to pass on to every individual affected by blood cancer. It's a daunting task, but the cause makes every hill climb and every mile worth it." Support for Mr. McMahon's challenge can be given by donating online via his dedicated Just Giving page. He added, "Every pound we raise through the Tour 21 goes directly towards life-saving clinical trials and research. Knowing that our efforts are contributing to potentially groundbreaking advancements in blood cancer treatment is a powerful motivator. We're not just riders, we're part of a larger movement to cure leukemia. I'm continually inspired by the support and the stories of the community rallying behind the Tour 21. It's heartwarming to see how sports can bring people together for a cause that's bigger than any individual achievement."
Oxford researchers are optimistic that the world's first cybercrime index, which ranks the globe's hotspots, will help to tackle the often unseen crime. The index, which ranks where cybercriminals are most active, named the USA in 4th place and the UK in 8th, after Nigeria and Romania. Russia and Ukraine are at the top, with the new index showing that a relatively small number of countries house the greatest cybercriminal threats. The inventors of the index envisage it being used as a guide for the public and private sectors to allocate their assets effectively to the countries that are most rife with cybercriminals. The University of Oxford's Dr. Miranda Bruce, the co-author of the project, said, "The research that underpins the index will help remove the veil of anonymity around cybercriminal offenders, and we hope it will aid the fight against the growing threat of profit-driven cybercrime. The index provides insights into the geographical distribution of cybercrime and the various types of cybercrime occurring in different nations." Dr. Bruce added, "By continuing to collect this data, we'll be able to monitor the emergence of any new hotspots, and it's possible early interventions could be made in at-risk countries before a serious cybercrime problem even develops." The index was assembled through a survey of 92 world-leading experts in cybercrime intelligence gathering and investigation. The experts nominated countries they considered to be the most significant sources of 5 specific types of cybercrime, and ranked them according to the impact, professionalism, and technical skill of the cybercriminals. Associate Professor Dr. Jonathan Lusthouse from the University of Oxford Department of Sociology and the Oxford School of Global and Area Studies was another co-author on the project. He said, "Due to the illicit and anonymous nature of their activities, cybercriminals cannot be easily accessed or reliably surveyed. The best means we have to draw a picture of where these offenders are actually located is to survey those whose job it is to track these people." Professor Federico Varanesi from Sciences Po in France added, "Many people think cybercrime is global and fluid, but this study supports the view that much like forms of organised crime, it is embedded within particular contexts. We are hoping to expand the study so that we can determine whether national characteristics like educational attainment, internet penetration, GDP, or levels of corruption are associated with cybercrime." He added that the World Cybercrime Index is the first step in a broader aim to understand the local dimensions of cybercrime production across the world.
Restaurant Turtle Bay has revealed its new look outdoor seating in Oxford. Caribbean chain has a restaurant in the city centre which can be found on Friars Entry just off Magdalen Street. There have been booths outside the venue for quite some time, but these have recently been given a facelift by the bar. Each booth has now been given a roof to battle the elements, while they have also been given a fresh lick of paint and had lights installed inside for ambience. General Manager David Harrison said, "It was more of a weather thing, as it's pretty much always raining in the UK. So because we have the area and we already had the bench seating, it was to make the alleyway look a bit nicer, and now it's also covered us so we can use it more of the year round. It took the company that we used a couple of days to sort it, and in that last couple of days, we've had some lights put inside the booths to brighten them up, along with more paint. Customers are really enjoying it because they can obviously sit outside for more al fresco dining, and it's covered now so they no longer get wet. People can book them specifically with even bottomless brunch available to have outside in the booths too."
A popular riverside pub on the edge of Oxford is competing to be named the best in the country. The Victoria Arms in Old Marston has been named a county winner in the National Pub and Bar Awards for 2024. It is one of 94 pubs and bars across England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland that have scooped up a prestigious county winner title. The pubs, which have been selected on overall best practice across several operational categories, will be officially crowned at a red carpet celebration in June in London. A total of 15 regional winners, Pub Group of the Year, Bar Group of the Year, the Tyrrell's Terribly Good Taste Award, presented by the event's headline sponsor, and finally, the overall National Pub and Bar of the Year will be announced. The fact that we had record entries for the 2024 National Pub and Bar Awards tells us two things, said Tristan O'Hara, editor of Pub and Bar magazine, which runs the event. One is how highly the industry regards these accolades, which is fantastic, but also it shows that more operators are in need of really positive and strong publicity to help drive businesses at the moment. Pubs and bars are facing some of the biggest challenges in recent history. So if the National Pub and Bar Awards can help by lifting sales across these venues, then we're delighted to play our part. Its website says, "Situated on the banks of the River Charwell in Old Marston, the Victoria Arms is a stunning riverside pub and restaurant, with mooring available for punts on the River Charwell. Full of local history, the building dates back to the 17th century as the ferryman's cottage and once hosted a certain Oliver Cromwell." The website adds, "The Victoria offers traditional pub charm with beautiful interiors, a heated pergola terrace and huge beer gardens overlooking the river. In the kitchen, our focus is hearty seasonal dishes and elevated pub classics with local produce and ingredients at the heart of the menu. In the warmer months, it's all about street food inspiration, served up from our garden kitchen kiosk to the busy terrace and garden. Behind the bar, we're proud of our beer selection, with a great range of ale, lager and cider, courtesy of our award-winning Butcombe Brewery, along with our cocktail menu. We're child-friendly and dog-friendly both indoors and outside, with plenty of space for small and large groups. The National Pub and Bar Awards 2024 is sponsored by Tyrrells, ICR Touch, Kerrymaid, Panasonic, Santa Maria and Sky Business.
A budding football star met an Oxford United footballer after securing a free space on an Easter holiday camp. Oxford United in the Community, which runs programmes and courses, announced a young girl called Elsie had been selected to take part in an Easter football camp for free. This was after she had won a competition on Facebook to take part. Alongside her sister Poppy, Elsie met Hughes right-back Finn Stevens. Stevens has also played in the Wales under-21 national team, as well as for Oxford. He's a graduate of the Arsenal Academy. A statement from Oxford United in the Community said, "It was a great opportunity for the girls, whose surnames have not been disclosed, to make memories." Oxford United in the Community states, "It uses the power of football to inspire the people and communities of Oxfordshire to have positive aspirations for their future."
A service was held to celebrate 50 years of the Oxfordshire Fire Service. Rooley Road Fire Station took to Facebook to express their gratitude towards attendees at Rooley Road's joint celebration. As well as marking the service's 50th anniversary, the service held an annual veterans reunion. Participants, former firefighters from across the decades, travelled from across the world for the meet-up. According to Rooley Road Fire Station, folks savoured tea and cake while recollecting former times. The celebration marked the 50th year since the Oxford City Fire Brigade, Oxfordshire Fire Brigade, and various independent stations merged into the Oxfordshire Fire Service in 1974. A pole, which signifies a desire for peace throughout the world, has been erected in Abingdon. More than 50 people from various nationalities gathered on April the 6th at St Ethelwald's House Garden for the Peace Bowl's unveiling. The ceremony was concluded with the reading of a poem, after which everyone present spoke together a community affirmation which started, "We who stand here in sorrow for the victims of all violence today declare our hope for the future." Songs were sung, and after the ceremony, attendees were treated to tea and cake. The event was led by the town mayor, Councillor Gwyneth Lewis, who said, "Abingdon is a town of peace, represented by a mayor of peace," adding that the peace pole had the full support of Abingdon Town Council. Ms. Lewis has seen many peace poles in other countries during her work for the United Nations. During her time as mayor, Ms. Lewis has also started the process of applying to become a recognised town of sanctuary. This is another global initiative which supports peace and those suffering from conflict. There are now peace poles in more than 200 countries, and the peace pole movement is recognised by the United Nations. Two environmental organisations have paid tribute to the hundreds of volunteers across Oxfordshire who have helped to plant and restore hedgerows after this winter's planting session. Hedgerow Heroes, run by Campaign to Protect Rural England, CPRE, Oxfordshire, and Wild Oxfordshire, saw nearly 400 people take part. Their collective effort has regenerated 500 metres of hedgerows and established more than 2.5 kilometres of new green borders. Helen Marshall, director of CPRE Oxfordshire, said, "It's been an amazing effort." She added, "We're hoping we'll get the funding to run Hedgerow Heroes again next winter and would love to hear from any communities that might like to get involved." Jess Bauer, Hedgerows and Partnerships Officer at Wild Oxfordshire, said, "Hedgerows are powerhouses for nature. They are essential wildlife corridors and provide food, shelter and nesting locations for a wide variety of animals."
An Oxford orchestra will perform two pieces which share a connection and are particularly meaningful to their conductor. Scheduled for the 20th of April at 7:30 p.m. in St. Andrew's Church, St. Giles Orchestra will perform Dvorak's New World Symphony and William Grant Still's Afro-American Symphony. The two works are composed 40 years apart, but are linked by their strong influence of spirituals. The orchestra's conductor, Dwight Pyle Gray, a PhD student, studying the influence of African music on the 20th century African-American composers, said, "I am a passionate advocate of diversity within classical music. I work hard to promote the music of all underrepresented groups." The night will include Mr. Pyle Gray discussing his research on the William Grant Still Symphony. St. Giles Orchestra will also be performing Bizet's La Harisienne Suite No. 1. Tickets for the concert can be purchased at the venue entrance. For more information on the orchestra and its programme, go to stgilesorchestra.org.uk.
I would like to share the lyrics of a song which I find very reassuring at this time of year. The song is called You Must Believe in Spring. The music was written by Michel Legrand. It comes from the 1967 French movie musical Les Demoiselles de Rochefort, which is a film about a sailor looking all over the world for an elusive love. It has been recorded by Barbra Streisand, Bill Evans and Tony Bennett, amongst others. When lonely feelings chill the meadows of your mind, just think, when winter comes, can spring be far behind? Beneath the deepest snows, the secret of a rose is merely that it knows you must believe in spring. Just as a tree is sure its leaves will reappear, it knows its emptiness is just the time of year. The frozen mountain dreams of April's melting streams, how crystal clear it seems, you must believe in spring. When angry voices drown the music of the spheres, and children face a world that's far beyond their years, above the darkest sky, the full horizons lie, while all the reasons why, you must believe in spring. You must believe in love and trust it's on its way, just as the sleeping rose awaits the kiss of May. So in a world of snow, of things that come and go, where what you think you know, you can't be certain of, you must believe in spring and love.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.